Well, good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable and to our, well, I'll just say it's my favorite segment of the week. It's our book pick segment. We find out really cool books that are on store shelves, and better than that, we get to check in with our friends in the independent bookstore community. My own home bookstore is here, and I couldn't be more thrilled. Connie Brooks and Kate Reed from Battenkill Books in Cambridge are here. They have been spending a lot of time reading and studying, and they're ready for today's discussion. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Joe.
Pleasure to see you both. All right. Where would you like to begin?
All right, I'm going to dive in. I read a lot of thrillers, and especially in the summertime. I don't know why that is. And I love a good thriller. And so I've started off today with two. And the first one that I brought in to talk about is The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware. It's her latest. I've read all of Ruth's books up till now. And this one is a pitch-perfect nod to Gothic thrillers. So the story begins with Hal. She's a young woman with no family who is eking out a living, telling fortunes, and reading tarot cards in a seaside resort town. A letter arrives in the post, claiming that Hal is to receive a substantial inheritance from her grandmother. The only problem is that Hal knows the woman who died can't possibly be her grandmother. Putting aside all qualms and what morals Hal has, she decides she'll pursue the chance of an inheritance, even if it means passing herself off as someone else. When Hal arrives at the family estate, she quickly realizes there is more afoot and more off-kilter than just a little inheritance fraud. Befitting all good Gothic novels, there is a properly dilapidated mansion, reminiscent of Shirley Jackson's Hill House, and a marvelously dour housekeeper who will have you quaking in your boots. So that's The Death of Mrs. Westaway by Ruth Ware.
Excellent.
I go even darker with my next selection.
Oh, great. Go darker.
That wasn't dark enough. So be prepared for this next one, which I really adored. It's called The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay. So the setup is 7-year-old Wen and her parents, Eric and Andrew, are vacationing at a remote cabin on a quiet New Hampshire lake. Their closest neighbors are more than 2 miles in either direction along a rutted dirt road. One afternoon, as Wen catches grasshoppers in the front yard, a stranger unexpectedly appears in the driveway. Leonard is the largest man Wen has ever seen, but he's young and friendly and wins her over almost instantly. Leonard and Wen talk and play until Leonard abruptly apologizes and tells Wen, "None of what's going to happen is your fault." Leonard is then joined by 3 more people who are coming along the dirt driveway carrying strange, long-handled homemade tools. Leonard then tells Wen, "Your dads won't want to let us in, Wen, but they have to. Tell them they have to." What follows is an unbearably tense tale of paranoia, sacrifice, apocalypse, and survival. Ew. It does get grisly, I will warn you.
All right. That's all right. We'll take grisly. The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay.
Next one is a wonderful dysfunctional family tale, and this is The Family Tabor by Cherise Wallace. And I just finished Cherise's first novel, The Resurrection of Joan Ashby, and was very impressed by her writing and depth of characters. So I'm excited to pick up her new novel, which is just published. So in the story, Harry Tabor is about to be named Man of the Decade, his city's highest honor for a citizen dedicated to philanthropy and good works. Gathering together for the celebration are his wife, Roma, who herself is a distinguished child psychologist, and their children, Phoebe, a high-powered attorney, Camille, a brilliant social anthropologist, and Simon, a big firm lawyer who brings his glamorous wife and 2 young daughters. But of course, not all is as it seems with this perfect family. Simon can't sleep through the night, Camille can't decide what to do with her life, and Phoebe seems to be hiding something about her new boyfriend. What none of the children, or even his wife, know, however, is that Harry is hiding his own long-buried secret that drove him decades ago to relocate his young family to the California desert.
Oh, okay. You're going to leave it there, huh?
I'm going to leave it there.
The Family Taper by Charisse Wallace. Is that how we're pronouncing that?
I'm going to go with Wallace.
Yeah. Wallace. Okay. Yeah. And next up, we have nonfiction.
Yep. I'm going to go with a history book, which is a really fascinating story out of World War II. The book is The Indianapolis, the true story of the worst sea disaster in U.S. naval history and the 50-year fight to exonerate an innocent man. It's by Lynn Vincent and Sarah Vladek. So the disaster happens just after midnight on July 30th, 1945. Days after delivering the components of one of the atomic bombs from California to the Pacific Islands in the most highly classified naval mission of the war, the USS Indianapolis is sailing alone in the center of the Philippine Sea when she is struck by two Japanese torpedoes. The ship is instantly transformed into a fiery cauldron and sinks within minutes. 300 men go down with the ship. 900 make it into the water alive. For the next 5 nights and 4 days, almost 300 miles from the nearest land, the men battle injuries, sharks, dehydration, insanity, and even each other. Only 316 survive. Mm. For years, blame for the disaster is placed on the skipper, Captain Charles McVeigh III. But in a decades-long drama, the survivors of the Indianapolis sought to exonerate Captain McVeigh. And even the Japanese sub-commander who sank the Indianapolis, which is a Captain Hashimoto, in later years was part of an effort to clear McVeigh's name. It's a really incredible story. It's not an easy story to read, but a very important one, and one that comes right at the end of the war, so not one that's often told.
A bestseller now, isn't it? Did I see that on the bestseller list?
Yes.
That's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the name of the book is Indianapolis, the True Story of the Worst Sea Disaster in U.S. Naval History and the 50-Year Fight to Exonerate an Innocent Man. Very long title, but good
And
book.
Very long book.
Yes, and very long book. All right. Hey, Kate, you're up.
I'm up, and I've had this great desire lately to read great stories because I feel we really connect with the idea of story. We understand things better through story. And today I'm sharing three books that I think each tell a good story. The first book I've chosen is a book for middle readers called Willa of the Wood by Robert Beatty. And Willa of the Wood is about a young orphaned girl, a member of the Farrens. And the Farrens are a race that can change their appearance to match the forest leaves, the trunk of a tree, the color of the water, or even the star-studded nighttime sky. But the story is set in real-time great 1900s in the Great Smoky Mountains, and life in the mountains is changing quickly. And what will this mean for Willa and the woodsman whose home she's just raided? And what can Willa possibly have in common with this homesteader, someone her people both hate and fear? The story is action-packed, but it also portrays how one's thoughts and beliefs can shift and change as one, in this case Willa, has new life experiences. It's well done, and I highly recommend it for your 8 to 12-year-old.
It is. That sounds really cool. So
it is.
Robert Beatty?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Beatty?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Willa of the Wood.
Mm-hmm. The next good story is a picture book by Vermont author and illustrator Ann Hunter, and it's called Possum and the Summer Storm. And here Dad Possum and his three little ones have had their brush pile home swept downstream by a summer storm, and now they have no place to live. But Dad is optimistic about building a new home, and he finds encouragement from the creatures around him, the chipmunk, the muskrat, the wasp, and the oriole, who all add their unique building skills to the new structure. The new home and the story's ending is, they're both just delightful. And if you've ever visited Battenkill Books' children's room, you've already experienced Anne's realistic and gentle artwork through our Tree of Life mural. She does a really fine job of depicting animal life.
Beautiful stuff.
It is. And then lastly is the newest picture book written by Caldecott and Newbery Honor winner Tommy DePaola. Think Stregonona, if you're trying to think of how you might know Tommy. And it is called In a Small Kingdom and is illustrated by Doug Slotty. The story begins with bells tolling and an announcement to the townspeople of the kingdom that their much-beloved old king has died.
Mm.
And who will be the future king? Not to worry. The old king had chosen his young but thoughtful and gentle son, and with the help of the imperial robe, he will have the power needed to rule. But the robe is stolen and destroyed. And how will the young prince rule? I'm not giving away the ending, but I will tell you that, like in the previous story, the community plays a vital role in this small kingdom, and the story does have a happily ever after ending. That and Kill Books is lucky to have autographed copies of both Anne and Tommy and Doug's books. So come
excellent.
Visit us.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now, what else is going on at the bookstore?
I was going to say, Kate chose displaced families and kingdoms in flux. So, you know, timely topic.
That's
yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yes. What's on our mind here?
So we've got an event this Saturday, which is July 28th at 7 o'clock. We welcome Eric Rickstad back to Bat and Kill Books. Eric has a new mystery out. It's called What Remains of Her. And like his others, it's a very gloomy, atmospheric mystery set in rural Vermont with a young girl and her mother in a long unsolved case who've disappeared, and a recluse who believes that this young girl he finds in the woods is the reincarnation of his missing daughter. So that's Saturday.
Wow. That's a lot.
I know,
okay.
That's a lot, right?
Yes. And that's the big event. Anything else?
That's the big event. We still have, we have Where's Waldo going on all of July, which is a village-wide scavenger hunt for kids. They can come up and find the Waldo figure in 18 local businesses. So that runs through the end of July. Then coming up in August, we have a Civil War historian and author. His name is Brad Quinlan. He's coming on August 12th at 2 o'clock, and he's just written a book on the 123rd New York Volunteer Infantry in the Civil War, and that was a unit that was raised in and around Salem, New York. So Brad will be talking about that.
All good stuff. Well, wonderful, wonderful things happening at Bat and Kill Books, and you can find out more by going to their website, batandkillbooks.com. batandkillbooks.com. Better yet, and I mean this, better yet, you can go visit them. They're right on Main Street in Cambridge, New York. If you you go out on if you go on Route 22, you take a left.
That's right.
And if you've gone to the railroad tracks, you've gone too far.
Yep.
But not very far.
Not
just park
far.
Right there and you're the store is there.
Just don't park on the tracks.
That's right. That's bad. Because there are trains that still come through. And you're near the brewery. So
you're right around the corner. You can have a beer after your book.
Beer and books.
Mm-hmm.
You park in that back lot. You can knock both
out. You're good.
And then if you're coming from Greenwich, you come out on 372. And then right after you've crossed the tracks, you park on your right hand side, and the bookstore is right across the street. Have I made that easy enough? I hope so.
I hope so.
If I've confused you, I apologize, but
just call us.
Check your GPS. That's right. batandkillbooks.com. And you can also see the whole list on our website, or entire list, I should say, wamc.org/roundtable or via podcast. Connie, Kate, thank you so much for being
here.
Thank you.
Delight as always.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.